The world has been touched in recent days by the news of the death and funeral of Nelson Mandela. Mr. Mandela moved in life from Madiba clan leadership to student and lawyer to political activist and effective and revolutionary organizer, some would say terrorist, to convicted criminal and prisoner for life, to president and father of a nation that made a decision to move in a new way. He was a conciliator and a compromiser, a pragmatist and unifier, a mature world leader who knew his power and respected his limitations. What the world would be without Nelson Mandela and the movement he helped form and lead, we can only guess. I will say that the inspiration his leadership gave to generations of people around the world changed us all, changed the possibilities many of us saw and see for the world that we are left to try to lead. I knew by reputation a colleague of Madiba whose memorial service for the Boston area I helped to lead in 1995. Joe Slovo was a leader of the South African Communist Party, a close comrade of Mandela's, and a person who sparked international conversation among Marxists and working class people and other progressives in the years after the Soviet Union collapsed for his critique of some of the working class concepts developed by Karl Marx in the 19th century and elaborated by Vladimir Lenin in the 20th. Slovo walked with Mandela and was a key ally in the South African labor movement. I was blessed to rise with others in the Boston area to say Kaddish at the conclusion of Slovo's memorial. I knew by acquaintance Chris Hani, the leader of Umkhonto Wesizwe, the army of the African National Congress. Hani was extremely popular among the youth and young adults of the freedom movement in South Africa. I helped manage his tour of the United States in the late 1980s and personally supervised his appearance in the Episcopal Cathedral in Boston. He was a world-class terrorist preaching from a pulpit not unlike this. A leader of the armed struggle, named by Margaret Thatcher and others a terrorist, this man, educated in Anglican schools and by the injustice which was South Africa, claimed Nelson Mandela and his witness for justice from a prison cell as something that allowed him to persevere as a leader banished from his nation, from his people, as he did the international work of encouraging a worldwide anti-apartheid struggle. But it was Themba Vilakazi, the New England director of the African National Congress, who most directly connected me to Nelson Mandela and the perseverance of black and other South Africans in dismantling the apartheid, the apartness, the separation, the segregation that was the legal system of South Africa. Themba organized events and wrote brilliantly and argued passionately and built an effective movement of people who raised consciousness and who divested governmental, university, and other investment portfolios from South African companies and offered ways that individuals and organizations could publicly distance themselves from the South African system. An odd, and I'll say funny, but that's up to you, story has to do with divestment from Bank of Boston, a large investor in South Africa. Little Flags Theater had a bank account with Bank of Boston, had had accounts there for years. And when we learned about Bank of Boston's position against divestment, we publicly, with dozens of other nonprofits, pulled our money out of Bank of Boston and moved them to a smaller, more local bank. In the 3 years that we moved our money to four different banks, each year the small bank was bought up by Bank of Boston. So it gave us a chance every 6 months or so to get out there and say, we're not doing business with you no more. Oh, Lord. We love the symbolic gesture. In the months before Mandela was set free, Temba and other members of the ANC moved back to South Africa to bring personal witness to the world's interest in ending racial separation in South Africa. It was a joyful and sad day when Temba and his family left Boston. It was a magnificent day in February 1990 when Mandela walked free. How did this man have such tenacity? Certainly he knew the injustice that he lived, that his people lived. But to have hope that the injustice could be removed, that change could indeed come, required of Mandela a measure of faith. We've come this far by faith, the old hymn states. But where did Mandela's faith reside? I believe that Mandela's faith is captured in the philosophy of Ubuntu, the Zulu notion from the 19th century of humanity, developed during the apartheid struggle to include a whole system of understandings of what humanity is and even how humanity is. Ubuntu says, I am a person because you are a person. A person finds personhood through other people. Intersubjective personality formation affirms each of us and all of us as subjects of our lives, not objects of someone else's life. We discover our own humanity and personhood as we experience and affirm the other's personality and the other's humanity. We discover that we are not the same, yet our capacity to see personhood in each other gives us a way to understand our own personhood, our own humanity. Mandela grew to understand Ubuntu as the bedrock of his conception of a new South Africa. To the extent that the African National Congress was called to be the subject of African liberation, then other African forces and the white forces needed to be reduced to becoming the objects of the ANC's capacity, the ANC's fortune. Mandela was able to put on the jersey of the South African Springboks national rugby team because he could not know his own humanity without experiencing and acknowledging the humanity of those who had historically opposed him. Ubuntu, I am because you are, because we are, included even the apartheid-promoting foe. Amandla, we were taught in those days, power. Gowetu, to the people. Power to the people, that was just, that was necessary, that was true. But Ubuntu, I am a people because you are a people, because we are in ways that we cannot yet imagine. We are a people. Ubuntu expanded the notion of who was the people in whom Amandla, power, might be vested. Yaakov is alone, the scripture tells us, alone, after having crossed a major tributary of the Jordan River, alone on his journey, living out the curse that had been his since he sold his birthright, sold his relationship with his family, sold what was rightfully his to his brother Esau. Yaakov had a curse on his name. He had always had this difficult life, from being born feet first to losing the struggle of wits with Esau. But this night, after leaving home in search of a new home and a future, after crossing the river at a wild, ridiculously rigorous place, rugged place, and a dangerous gorge, after risking wives, pardon me, and maidens and children and everything he owned, he was confronted by a mysterious stranger. We aren't told where this stranger comes from. The story is absent, blank about this. There's no explanation. Suddenly, there's a stranger. He appears, and the two of them wrestle. Wrestle all night. And the wrestling is fierce. Fierce in that it lasts all night. Neither of them is going to give up. Fierce in that Yaakov is injured. His leg is knocked out of joint. His leg is dislocated. His hip is in pain. And Yaakov insists that at the very least, the wrestling partner must bless him. It's a little like making him say uncle. It's an affirmation that Yaakov will not give up, that somehow he will risk injury and he will not be defeated. But it's also an acknowledgement that he can't win. They're stuck. He can't win against this wrestling foe. It's the mysterious stranger who's going to have to end this. He must accept the stalemate, must recognize him and his power, and must bless him. Must bless Yaakov and Yaakov's aims. And the stranger does. Now, it may be that the stranger knows that the dawn is about to break. And it may be, I mean, how many places do we know in the cultures of humanity that dawn coming sends certain strangers away? I don't know the last vampire story you listened to. I don't know who are some of the other folk in our minds that their power goes away when the sun comes up, but it's possible that this wrestling stranger knows he's got to seal the deal right now before the sun comes up and it's all over. The stranger must do what can be done as the dawn approaches. And the stranger does something that to Yaakov is entirely unexpected. The stranger gives Yaakov a new name. Yisrael. I've got a new name over in Jordan. I've got a new name, and it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. Yisrael, God fighter, he calls him. The one who has struggled with power, struggled with all power, struggled with the most powerful power of all the powers. Yisrael is his new name, his farewell blessing name. And it is a great blessing. The curse on Yaakov is robbed of its strength because Yaakov is no longer his name. Yisrael is free. There is power in a name. The mysterious stranger so knows the power in a name that the stranger will not tell Yaakov what his name is. He withholds the name, But Yaakov, now Yisrael, makes a guess. He names the place where they struggled Peniel, face of God. I have seen God face to face, and my life has been saved. It is in wrestling, it seems to say. It is in struggling, it seems to mean. It is in refusing to give up that God is found. Not that God enters easily into the situation, not that God enters with promises of healing and wealth, not that the one who engages the wrestling, the struggle, even the God, will walk away happy and whole. Yaakov has a new name, but Yisrael has a new limp from his injury, from his effort, from his display of faith. But he limps. He limps forward. He limps forward into a new land, into a new day, into a new world, into a new promise. Nelson Mandela had so many names. Rohilala at his birth, it means troublemaker. What a good name to give your kid. Nelson, in his first days of school, African children were given English names by the British colonials who never could quite learn how to pronounce African names. Dalibunga, the creator of council, when he came of age as a Xhosa man. Hulu, as he grew into great adulthood, it means the great one, the paramount. Madiba, the name of an ancestor, tied him to a lineage and a community. This name showed the highest respect in formal settings. Tata, father. Father of his nation, the sweetest name. So what about your struggles? What is it that you engage, sweetheart, sweet community of faith? What will you wrestle with and never say uncle? What will you cross the river for? What will you risk everything for? What will you take injury for? What will you demand to be blessed for? What in your life is the mysterious stranger whose work must be completed before the dawn appears? Church, what about us? What about our struggles? What about our risks? What about our injuries? What about our walking forward, even with a little bit of a limp? How shall we discover Ubuntu? We are. Because you, world, are. Because an even greater we are. We are humanity. How shall we go forward, even with a limp? And what will our new name be? Amandla Goetu Ubuntu.